Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. It is good to be back with you once again. We have been on vacation for the last few weeks, and over that time, a lot has happened. And in fact, the horrific fires that struck Colorado, largely near the area I used to live in, Colorado Springs, not to mention the East Coast blackouts, George Zimmerman goes to jail. He posts bail, lies, goes back to jail, and then posts a $1 million bond and gets back out of jail again. Now, on the political front, the president virtually endorsed same-sex marriage. The Supreme Court struck down several key parts of Arizona's law on immigration while upholding President Obama's signature legislation, the health care law. All of which I would consider to be victories for the president. And most recently, President Obama signed a major transportation funding and student loan bill that authorizes over $1 billion in federal transportation stimulus. The bill passed both houses with bipartisan support, which is good. Now, the funds are earmarked for road construction projects throughout every state. So as you can see, we have a lot to talk about. Now, the discussion today includes most of the topics that I just mentioned, and coming up in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about Chris Rock's comments that he made on about the 4th of July, and in our sports segment, we talk the recent changes in the NBA and, of course, Serena Williams' Wimbledon victory. So let's get started. Now, in an article by CNN, President Obama signed on Friday a transportation funding and student loan bill, which passed Congress last week in a rare election year compromise between Republicans and Democrats, believe it or not. Now, in an unusual show of bipartisanship, members of both parties were on hand for the White House ceremony, including members of the administration, Congress, as well as state and local governments. Now, this is an outstanding piece of business, and I am very appreciative of the hard work that Congress has done on it. My hope is that this bipartisan spirit spills over into the next phase, President Obama said, encouraging members to pass larger infrastructure measures and start doing more to reduce the debt burden that our young people are experiencing. Now, at the ceremony, he specifically recognized House Transportation Committee Chairman John Mica, a Republican from Florida. Standing behind him, Democrats, lawmakers, and Governor Martin O'Malley, a Democrat from Maryland. Now, of course, this comes just days after President Obama's signature legislation passed the Supreme Court. Now, I really don't like keeping score. After all, this is, or we are, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. But you and I both know this is another win for the president. So what else does the president have to do to get reelected? After all, when you go down his list of accomplishments and the fact that he is definitely for the people, for the life of me, I don't understand why a person would choose Mitt Romney over President Obama. Just don't understand it. Now, over the last year, or actually 3 years, President Obama has passed so many remarkable legislation. I mean, he's really been on the forefront for the people. So whenever I hear a lot of this opposition or this crazy rhetoric against the president, I just don't understand it. I wonder why these people choose to do that. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to open up the phone lines. And when we do that, we actually going to take your calls, and we're going to pose a simple question. How would you grade President Obama's first term? That's going to be the simple question we're going to pose. Again, how would you grade President Obama's first term? You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Two Enterprises has joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. 101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, in just a few minutes, we are going to open up the phone line. So, to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. But first, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present the others, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's get right to it. The first question I pose, and I pose this to the entire audience, the entire world, all the social media stratosphere, is if you had to grade President Obama, what grade would you give him and why?
If I had to grade the president, I would say overall he gets a I'd probably give him a B+ overall. If there was different categories, he'd have different grades per category. But I'd say overall he gets a B+, primarily because of all that he has accomplished, although I wish that he had been able to do more. And I know that's not all of his fault, but, you know, when you're at the top, you take the good and the bad. So he's definitely succeeded amidst great odds. And but I would say, you know, he gets a B+, A-, B+.
Okay, so I like that. Now, you said if you had to break them down categorically, you would give him different grades. So let's break them down. So let's start out with the economy, right? That is the buzzword that permeates our society today because of what he inherited, but he ultimately has and or owns right now. So for the economy is concerned, what would you grade him? How would you grade him?
Well, for the economy, I'd give him an A for effort because it's not as though he hasn't tried. But in terms of things being done and whatnot, he'd have to probably get a B-, C+, primarily because he hasn't been able to sway enough Republicans to see the good for the country. And maybe that's a very high expectation. Maybe he'll never be able to do that. But people don't know enough about the inner workings of Congress. So I have to say, from the people's perspective, it doesn't look as though he's done enough. But I give him an A for effort because he's had his jobs bill ready to go for months now and outlined it in very detail, and yet Congress has sat on it, so it's not done. And because it is not done, although we've had 28 consecutive months of job growth, people don't understand that if they're still unemployed, although we're losing much more numbers of people a month under President Bush, and for some reason mainstream media and the average person doesn't either realize it, don't know it, or just don't care, and just want everything to fall to this president. So he's done, excuse me, as much as he could do with the resources that he had, for sure.
You mentioned the unemployment rate. That's a strong measure of what our society believes the economy is either doing well or not doing so well. But the reality is the unemployment numbers really don't paint a complete picture. I think you've mentioned in the past that a lot of people just are not just looking at all, not because they are unqualified, but just don't want to work. So
right.
You
do have a slew of people that don't want to work. You have some that have decided to go back to school and get another trade, so they're not looking to work right now. You have some that have opened up their own businesses, so they're not going to be counting those numbers. But, you know, I read something interesting on Twitter the other day when the job numbers came out at, you know, still unchanged at 8.2% unemployment, and someone said 92% employment rate. Wow, that's a good number. Then I thought,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
that's a good way to look at that. Yeah, 92% of your population that is working. Why are we not talking about that number?
Right.
Why are we
right.
talking about the number that if Congress would do get off its do-nothing and do something, the number may not be as high. Or it may. Who knows? But the fact that Congress hasn't done their part, you know, it lends into, you know, this whole scary tactic that the world is, you know, is Chicken Little all over again. The sky is falling.
Yeah, the glass half empty as opposed to being half full.
Right. You got 92% of people that do have a job, that want a job, they work in. That's 92% of your population. That's pretty good.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's move on then. Grade his domestic policy. If you had to give him a grade from the things especially the legislation he's been able to pass, and just overall, even through executive orders or through whatever measure that he had available to him, how would you grade his domestic policy?
I would give him an A+.
Wow.
Because he's done some things that have not ever been done. We can start with the Affordable Health Care Act.
Yeah.
We can start with Lilly Ledbetter Act, equal pay for women. We can start
yeah.
with just making a statement, not passing any laws or making any executive decisions, but just primarily making a statement on the fact that he does not feel that same-sex couples should be discriminated against. I think that was important, although it got all sort of backlash, and it was kind of weird how all that happened. Repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's not defending of the Defense of Marriage Act. Employing and instructing his Department of Justice to take a hard look at some of these states with these voter suppression laws, bills that are out there, taking a look at this Department of Justice, I think, has probably been the most busiest I've seen out of the Department of Justice in probably 20 years, because a lot of the things that they are addressing, the Bush administration didn't even address, especially things around civil rights issues. They didn't even have, I don't even know if they even had a civil rights division under President Bush. If they did, it was inoperable. Those sorts of things, a student loan, ensuring that our rates don't go up with that, and some of the things around Pell grants and ensuring that people have access. So domestically, he's done more. And I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I don't have my list in front of me, but I know those things are critical. And when you look at the there's two things that surprise me about people, and it's the whole thing around voting, and then the group of people that say, oh, I'm not going to vote because he hasn't done enough for me or for the black community or whatever. And yet then you look at also as it relates to health care. And these are two areas that when you say if it wasn't that important and if it didn't really mean anything, why would they be working so hard to dismantle it or to get
yeah.
rid of it?
Oh, yeah.
So if your vote really didn't count, why would they be working so hard in so many states to take it away from you or make it more difficult for you to get it? And if health care was so bad for everybody, why would they be working so hard to get rid of it? Because they know once people really begin to feel the benefits and see the benefits of the Affordable Health Care Act, then they know people are not going to want them to touch it. So they keep having to try to demagogue it and make it seem like it's this bad, oh, it's going to kill the economy, when in reality that's not what's going to happen. So domestically, I say, you know, he gets an A+. He's off the charts on what he's done. We're just overly charged by what we see on television, and we spend very little time doing our own research, and we spend very little time finding things out for ourselves, and we rely on people on TV to tell us the truth, and all they try to do is get ratings to, you know, keep their job.
Now, of course, you did not give a comprehensive list of all of the things that he's done, but that's quite of an impressive list just off the top of your head. And so what strikes me as odd or weird is that the president has done most – well, let me say this. He has done more in my lifetime in 3 years than a lot of presidents has done in two terms.
Mm-hmm.
So what else does a president have to do to get reelected? After all, when you go down just this list, and there's a lot more, and the fact that he is definitely for the people, just in everything that he does, his behavior, his demeanor, his family values. What's going on with the American people? How come they can't see this?
Because he's black.
You know, I want to believe
I mean, that
that's not.
Majority. I mean,
understand,
that's
but I don't want to believe that to be true because whether it's a African American in the White House or a Latino or an Asian or Native American or Caucasian for that matter. If all of these things are happening in my favor, shouldn't I be for that guy, right? When I look at my basketball team and the fact that Jeremy Lin is an Asian, but he's scoring points, I'm gonna root for him, right?
Team. Jeremy Lin is by proxy part of your team. He's not there. I mean, if you really had it your way, he wouldn't be on your team. But since he is. And he's producing, you'll go ahead and cheer, but you're still cheering for the Knicks. You're not cheering for Jeremy Lin.
Well, shouldn't we be cheering for the USA then? Shouldn't
I agree
we be
with
cheering
you on that.
The entire company doing, I mean, healthcare is a prime example. Isn't it better that everybody is covered? Because we pay that in overall.
Right. I agree with you on that. But the problem is that my core belief of my right to be superior will not allow me to completely trust this man of color to know that he's better than me, that he's smarter, and that he really has my best interest at heart. It's the core of who I am as a person that won't let me do it. I've tried, and then you know I'll hear something that's 99.9% inaccurate. But it'll be easy for me to believe it because he's black, not because what he's done, because he's shown himself to be more than every single time. But at the end of the day, I still have this hidden agenda, this hidden notion, this thought, this feeling about certain people of color, and he happens to fall into that category. So I just can't, because I don't believe that he's there legitimately. I still think that there's something wrong with how he got there, that now all of a sudden our system is broken. Now all of a sudden the rulings from the Supreme Court don't mean anything. Wow. When
yeah.
do we become that nation?
Yeah. So let's
when
move on.
When do we become a nation where you have surrogates of people, i.e. Ted Nugent saying America would have been better if the South had won?
Yeah,
well, what does that
crazy.
Mean?
That's crazy.
So
okay, so let's move on to foreign policy. We talked about the economy. We talked about domestic policy, which he's clearly done really well. What about foreign policy? If it's the fact that we're talking about grading someone and we're breaking them down into different categories, he's done substantially well based on what he was inherited in the economy. We've had consecutive job growth. And you talked about 92% of the people that are working. That's amazing. Domestic policy, we went down a litany of great accomplishments, landmark accomplishment that will probably stand the test of time for many, many generations to come. Now we move on to foreign policy. How's he done there?
Well, he caught the number one person on the list, right?
Yeah. This is true.
I mean, you know.
And the top five,
I believe. If he had done nothing else. You know, but he has done some other things. He has taken and is beginning to take China to task on some of their things. He's, you know, we know he gave the command order to go ahead on and raid the compound and find Osama bin Laden, and was successful and terminated him. So he made that call. He's made so many calls around. He took a back seat, as opposed to they wanted him to be the driver when it came to everything that was going over in Egypt. And, you know, so on one scale, on one level, he'd probably get a B-plus on some foreign foreign issues, because there's still so much unrest in Syria. There's so many, you know, so much going on in Africa that you just don't even know where to begin. And where are we? You know, I don't know. And I don't know if I don't know because we're not doing anything, or I don't know because it's not being reported. So it's hard for me to give him an A, because there's still some unrest in some places. But he did get us out of Iraq. We were drawing down troops in Afghanistan, so he's sticking to those promises that he made on the campaign trail. So you got to give it to him. May not want to, but you got to give it to him.
Because
right, exactly.
And so let me ask you this: why is it then that they? Let me be specific. The GOP tries to marginalize the Osama bin Laden victory, or should I say the capture or annihilation of Osama bin Laden. Why do they try to marginalize that?
Because President Obama did it. Because I guarantee you, if this had happened on the Bush watch, that whoever was running in that election would have been running on the fact that the Republicans did it.
And you know what? They wouldn't even campaign. They would just.
They wouldn't have to, because people would just be so over it.
Osama bin Laden dead.
Right.
What? You know. That would
right.
Be it.
I mean, right. And they would stand and boast and as they say the president did, which I didn't see it that way. He didn't take any victory laps. He hadn't beat himself on the chest, because that was a difficult decision that only he could make, and he made it.
Right. Yeah, he
and
did.
And when Bush had that opportunity, he didn't make it. He chose to ignore it. So therein, you know, there you have it. But the difference between the GOP and the Democrats is that Democrats sometimes, you know, shy away from their successes, whereas GOP, they stand even on top of their failures.
Speaking of
they
GOP,
still act like Bush was okay for going to war. I mean, you still have Condoleezza Rice talking about the fact that, you know, they had the intelligence, and yet we know they didn't. But they still get on TV and sell their books and say that.
Yeah. So speaking of GOP, they don't seem to have an answer right now. I mean, although Mitt Romney is their presumptive nominee, I haven't heard. He seems to be, and people use this analogy all the time. Always, you know, running the kind of the prevent defense. You know, he sits back there and just does nothing, right? And he doesn't talk about any strategy or policy. You hear him say this 59-point plan, but you don't hear any talk about any specifics. All he does is sit there and talk about what the president has not done and which are lies. So I just
right.
don't understand how in the world that Mitt Romney has a fighting chance in this year's election, because he hasn't done or said anything that's remotely relevant to what we're going through today.
Okay, well, I'm going to take you back to about 10 minutes ago when I said because of the president's color, because of his ethnicity, that is why Mitt Romney thinks he has a fighting chance, because he is relying upon the fear and the hatred of a pocket of people to carry him over the finish line. He doesn't have to campaign. All he has to do is talk bad about the president, make up stuff about the president. And you still have a certain group of people that still think the president wasn't born here, that still think the president is illegitimate, that, you know, have all these thoughts about him that's based nothing but on the fact that he's black. Half at that.
Wow.
So that's it. I mean, so Mitt Romney, you know, he skated through their primary. Everyone want to act like it was such a grueling process. No, it wasn't. Because Mitt Romney had all the money. He continues to have all the money. So when you have all the money, you can do anything you want to do.
Yeah.
You can make up stuff. You can say stuff. So when Newt Gingrich and what was the other crazy man name?
Rick Perry. Oh, you're talking about him.
Well, all
crazy, really.
But, right, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't even know where to start.
Crazy.
But anyway, that was a bunch of clowns. But when you have them trying to show you what you're going to get in a Mitt Romney nomination, you know, people weren't hearing it. Well, now, you know, everybody's like, okay, maybe he wasn't the best choice. Oh, but it's too late now. Y'all have a choice.
Exactly.
Unless somebody pops up, you know, at the ninth hour come to the convention and says, okay, I'll be the nominee. I can be the president. But I don't know who that is. I really don't. I don't know who's out there in the atmosphere, universe, the world, that could come down and present themselves in such a manner that they would have a fighting chance against President Obama. I just don't see it. I'm not saying it's not possible. I just don't see it. And I don't care who Mitt Romney gets to be his running mate. It's not going to matter because Joe Biden is still going to eat you up. Whoever the vice president pick is, in that debate, you're dealing with an old white man who just really don't care.
Right.
And when you get to that age, you say about anything you want to say.
Yeah. Okay, so let me put a little salt in the game. What happens if he does pick Dr. Condoleezza Rice? You know that there's a lot of chatter around him perhaps picking Dr. Rice as his running mate. And what happens? Mm-hmm. How does that shake things up?
It doesn't. I don't see it shaking anything up. I don't have anything in common with Condoleezza Rice, except for we both black and we're from the South and we women. That's about all I have in common with her. And, you know, she's more educated than I am, but I'm somewhat educated. But other than that, we don't agree on much. So it's not gonna have a shake of the base sort of women that I think they're looking for or black people. Because, you know, they seem to think that we vote for people because they black, but we know that's not the case. Or we would have had a black president a long time ago. Jesse would have won. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So,
or Herman Cain.
So we know, huh?
Or Herman Cain.
Right, except for there's not as many black Republicans as there are black Democrats or independents.
Right.
So Herman Cain really didn't have a fighting chance in that fight. but I don't think putting Condoleezza Rice on the ticket is going to do anything. I mean, it'll cause a stir. He might get a little bump in the polls with a few people, but I don't think it would mean. I really don't know who he can put on his ticket that would really give him leverage. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I just see Condoleezza Rice coming in, and it could potentially overshadow him, and that's probably why he won't pick her. Moreover, I would believe that she comes with a core following for the GOP. It's just that I think in her that what goes against her that is she is an African American female, and that you know they don't want to see one come out and another go in. So if it holds true that they are doing these things because the president is African Americans, and therefore if Condoleezza Rice would be another one in the White House, and I just don't see how she could potentially.
But see, she's safe because she's one of them. They only have that thought about black people that are Democrat. They don't have that thought about black people that are Republican.
Mm.
But here's the thing that Condoleezza Rice brings that nobody wants to talk about. She brings George Bush back up. See, you can't serve as his, who's the cabinet member that she served as, and don't bring up George Bush in the whole war.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously?
Right.
I mean you don't want to. I mean Bush can't even go campaign for Mitt Romney. So
right.
why would you put her on there to show us a constant reminder why we in this war and in this recession and got all this debt anyway? So, I would welcome, as the president said, that's a debate I'd love to see. I'd love to see her try to debate her way out of that with Joe Biden.
Yeah. So that's potentially then the game changer if she does, because that conversation will overshadow the presidential race because people will bring it back up. The ties to Bush would be there. It would be a constant reminder of the George Bush years, and he wants to stay far away. Okay, yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I like that. I haven't heard that argument before, so you heard it first right here on Current Events with Patrick Cook. Yours truly, Jima. That was a great analysis right there. So
Thanks, you know
this presidential election is going to take a lot of votes, and they really parsed the votes based on these states, and dissected them in many different ways. And that's why I'm glad to see the NAACP tackling the same issues that we brought up a couple of years ago around voters, Voting Rights Act, in particular the voter suppression. And so time and time again, you and I have talked about this, and we kind of saw it evolve, if you will. We saw the states as they began to begin passing legislation, 1 or 2, and then 10, and then 15, and now ultimately 21 or so. States have now enacted legislation to, in essence, suppress voters, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the NAACP is now having a convention that I think is actually going on right now.
Next week, I think.
And is focusing on voter participation and the civil rights organization effort to fight what it sees to be as restrictive voting laws that's been passed. And so it is being reported that President Joe Biden and Attorney General Eric Holder and Mitt Romney is going to be attending this event this week.
Mm-hmm.
So now the theme of this convention, which starts Saturday and runs through July 12th, is NAACP, Your Power, Your Decision, Your Vote. So do you think that Mitt Romney's participation in an NAACP is strictly for optics?
Of course it is. I mean, yeah. But, I mean, he was given the invitation, and he accepted. George Bush was given it several times, and he never showed up. So, I give him an A for effort for accepting the invitation and not shying away from it. That's going to be a tough crowd, you know.
Yeah.
But he has to go and really, I mean, for a person that's been running for national office for the last 6-7 years, there's still a lot about him that people don't know, you know.
Right.
I know the sound bites, but I really don't know what you really stand for because you change your mind so often. So
right.
Maybe to give him an opportunity to go and kind of, you know, outline some things. He'll have to be careful. He'll have to talk more about himself than about the president, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely wouldn't get anywhere doing that, not in
exactly.
that crowd.
Right.
So, you know, he'll want to, you know, make a comparison and contrast, but he'll have to be careful because, of where he is. And that's fine. I think it'll do those that want to go and hear him. It'll do him some good to hear him for himself about, you know, what he has to say about things as opposed to the sound bites you get on the news. So,
yeah.
You know, of course, in an election season, everything is politics. Everything.
Right. Yeah.
Everything is about the moment. Everything is about the optics. So, you know, I do applaud him for stepping up to the plate and saying, I'll go.
So in lieu of all the legislation around the country that is seemingly more restrictive around voting acts, voting rights, particularly around the people of color, how do you think Mitt Romney will fare at this convention? What is going to be his overarching message, you think? Because
well,
I know
Romney,
this is going to come up.
Well, he can't. I mean, it's not like it's going to be like a town hall. People have some questions. I think he'll get up and give a speech or something. But
mm-hmm.
he really can't speak to it because he hasn't spoken to it before. How are you going to all of a sudden get in front of a room of people who are going to be most affected by these laws and now have something to say? But you don't say that in front of the other crowds. So he would come off as disingenuous, and people would pick up on that fairly quickly and would call him out on that, I would hope, fairly quickly. So all he can – I mean, he really can't speak to it because he hasn't said anything to Rick Scott. He hasn't said anything to Scott Walker. He hasn't said anything to Virginia's Governor McDonnell. He hasn't said anything to the Pennsylvania governor at this point. So why now – or here in Texas. I don't think he's had a conversation with Rick Perry. So why get to Houston at the NAACP forum convention and all of a sudden you have thoughts and comments about what's going on in over 26, 27 states around voter suppression when you haven't said anything about it your entire campaign? So if he speaks on it, he's going to come off as being disingenuous.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to talk about himself. He needs to talk about what he stands for today because it'll probably change the next day. And then he needs to talk about, you know, what his vision is for America. That's it.
Hey, them soundbites going to kill him, though. If he,
yeah.
He's like, that soundbite's going to kill
him. Yeah, but if he tries to touch on anything too specific that he's never talked about before, that's going to kill him, too.
So he's
going to walk a tightrope on this one.
But you know he always, I call him the Manchurian candidate, right? He is a candidate has been he's handed his talking points, right? And
right.
So for the last several months, including the last several weeks, he's been talking about repealing Obamacare. Will he say this knowing that a lot of African Americans are affected by the health care law in a positive manner? And so you think he's going to be talking about repealing the health care, affordable health care?
He'll have to, because he's been talking about it everywhere else. So he'll have to say it. He's not going to get a warm reception, but in saying it, then he has to say how he would change it. See, the problem that the Republicans are having, the problem that Mitt Romney is having, he keeps saying, I can do it better, but you're not telling me what you're going to do better. So you want to say you want to get rid of affordable health care, but yet you still say you care about people having insurance, but then what are you going to do different? What is your plan to ensure 32 odd million Americans to have insurance? What's your plan? And unless you give me something that's different than what the president's done, which is follow your lead from the state of Massachusetts, I really don't know what you can say about that.
Right.
I mean, you know, besides instead of calling it a penalty, you call it a mandate. Okay, fine. But everything in the Affordable Health Care Act was based off of the model that he said in Massachusetts, which he said he hoped would become a national model. But now he's saying that when he said national model, that was for each state to come up with their own plan. Yeah, right. And I got some swamp land for you too, Mitt.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, we talked about the voters' suppression that's happening across the country. I want to kind of hone in on this because I really want to – you said Mitt won't address it, but I wonder how he's going to get around it, because this is the title of the topic or the major theme at the NAACP convention this year. And I want to talk about this in the context of the mere 270 electoral votes that's required to be president, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, at any given day, the Democratic president can account for about 212. You know, California has 55, and Texas has a number of red state votes. And there's a number of blue and red that you can automatically put a checkbox in both candidates, Democrat and Republicans. It turns out that about 191 is allocated to Republicans and 212 for the Democratic nominee. And it pretty much doesn't matter who it is. But it is those states like Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, New Hampshire, North Carolina, and Florida that really makes up the difference to come to the conclusion of 270. So, which means that it is very important that we pay a close attention to these voter suppression laws, because it's going to come down to those states. And most recently, Pennsylvania has really been under scrutiny because of what they're trying to do, because they know it's a battleground state, and they know if they can, you know, tweak a vote here, stop a vote there, it makes all the difference in the world. And most people that think about voter suppression thinks about it in the context of all 50 states. Oh, it's not happening in my state. Oh, it's okay. Here's a few votes here and there. But the reality is, if you take the Democrat and Republican, just parse those votes out and says, okay, these are the ones in your court, you really have to concentrate on those what we call battleground states. It matters if we take a vote away or two away, because they can really make the difference in a presidential election. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, that was what their plan was. I mean, the sad part about it is that this didn't just happen this year. This happened after they, you know, pulled the wool over people's eyes, and people have these high expectations of President Obama that they've never had of any other president in the history of the United States of America. He was in a year and a half. It wasn't even 2 years, because he got voted in 08 and was in had the inauguration in 09. So a year and a half. That whole first year and a half, Republicans did everything they could to make him out to be this evil man because of health care and how, you know, they made health care, the debate for it last for forever. So when they got back into power in 2010, thanks to a lot of independents who changed their votes, because it wasn't Democrats. Democrats went out and voted in the same number we always vote in an off presidential election year. And so, for people to try to put that out on, we didn't go out and vote, that's not necessarily true. Let me take that back. Black people went out and voted in the same numbers they do in a non-presidential election year. Now, I don't know about the other people, but I do know that black people went out and voted in the same number. So maybe it was the independents that crossed over, and so then they get these Republican governors that they all voted for because they were so upset with the president. They was just so – he was just taking us on this path, and died. They just believed everything they were hearing. And yet at the same time, jobs have continued to grow. And at the same time, you know, people begin to feel better about themselves. But that's not the message you heard. So now you have 2010, and they got all those people in there. You got this do-nothing Congress. They didn't sat since they've been there. They ran on jobs, 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 right? They have not introduced one jobs bill, not one, since they've been in Congress, not one. But they've voted repeatedly on repealing health care, like they're going to do again this upcoming week. But not one time have they put to the floor one vote on jobs. So here we sit, right? So here we sit talking about that, and here they are in charge, and it was a mastermind decision by Karl Rove, who started this probably the day the president got elected.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got to get rid of this vote. This is the vote that took him over. What they don't realize is that it wasn't just that the people that are going to be affected by it are not just black and brown people. People that are going to be infected by it are also the elderly, also young people.
Mm-hmm.
When you begin to make it so I got to present you with my original birth certificate and I'm 77, 8, 90, 90 years old, I'm not going to be able to do that. I don't even know what my original birth certificate is.
And making people go get lawyers.
And neither does the county that I was born in rural Alabama or rural Arkansas, who knows where those records are. So now I got to pay $55 to get an official birth certificate. I'm on a fixed income now. I don't have no extra money, okay? So now I got to find the $50 to pay to get this original birth certificate. Not to mention, let's say I have no bills. Let's say I'm 21 years old and I'm a college student. And I don't have anything in my name yet because my parents have taught me that credit isn't good. So I don't have any debt like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I might have a student loan or something. But more than likely, you know, let's just say, so now I'm going to go renew my license. And I can't renew my license because now you need my original birth certificate and two other pieces of documents. This is in the state of Georgia, okay. Well, where I'm going to get there from if I stay at home with my mama, I don't have no bills coming in my name. I don't have any bills. So where is my other two documents coming from?
Yeah.
And you're now not letting me use my school ID unless it's at a state school. But since I go to Morehouse I go to Spelman,
right,
I can't use my school ID. But a kid that goes to the University of Georgia, they can use their school ID.
Right.
And it's things like that people don't even realize. And so all of that is having an impact. But it's not in my heart of hearts. Excuse me. I believe all this is going to backfire. It's all going to backfire. And some people who they thought could just go vote, they're not going to be able to go vote either.
You know, and so for anyone out there in the listening audience that do not believe that this voters' suppression is real, I want them to listen to House Republican leader Mike Tarzai that gave a speech on June 23rd, and here's what he had to say. And Jim, when he says this, I want you to respond to this because this is interesting. Because we talk about people when they have that Freudian slip, right? Listen to what he said, and let me get you to respond. Take a listen.
Which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
All right, I'm gonna play it one more time so you can hear it.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
All right, for anybody that's just tuning in, again, this is Pennsylvania House Republican leader Mike Tarzai speaking on June 23rd, and this is what he had to say about voter ID.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
So, Jima, tell me that this is not for real.
I can't tell you that it's not for real because it is very much for real and it's very much calculated. And you see what lengths people go to when they have such hate. If they had major disagreements with the president on his policies, I can understand. But this isn't about policy issues. This is about sheer hate of a man who happens to be in the most coveted office of the world. You know, the President of the United States is revered all around the world, and they cannot stand, not only can they not stand that he's sitting there, but the fact that the demographics of this great United States of America, when they talk about their founding fathers, they're not talking about anybody that we cherish. You know, when they talk about the Constitution, they talk about the parts that does not include any of the amendments, and that's what the people don't seem to remember. And so when you allow your hate to overpower you, you just believe whatever for the sake of believing it because you have nothing else to hold on to. So for him to say that and then for the crowd to clap, seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, but confirmation, who is shocked, mm-hmm. though? Because you go back to the primaries for the Republicans, right? And you go back to the time they booed the soldier serving,
yeah, uh-huh. Right.
over in the war zone right now,
yeah.
Serving, and they boo him because he's gay. You go back to them saying, let the person die because they don't have any insurance,
mm-hmm.
and they clap for that. You go back to the amount of executions that Rick Perry was so happy that he had done here in the state of Texas, and they clap for that. So surely we're not surprised at the tactics of the people in which we're dealing with. Surely, if we are, shame on us.
So which begs the question, now that we know the facts, right, we need to take action. We need to do something in particular to make sure, A, that we start now as opposed to October to try to get our voter IDs squared away. We need to start now doing whatever we can to register for early voting. I mean, there's a lot of things we can do now that we know the facts, right? We know that they are trying to suppress our vote, so we need to organize and to make sure that we do everything possible to make sure our vote counts. What you think?
Of course, and we should have been started. I mean, you know, we're now in the middle of the summer, and we're 4 months away from Election Day, probably, you know, 3 months away from some places that may still be able to do early voting. And you got to know that in a lot of these states, they're taking away early voting. They're taking away same-day voting and registration. They're taking away a lot of things. And a lot of those things have been things that have primarily benefited people of color. They're taking away the Sunday vote right before the election because they knew a lot of African-American churches would load up their people and head out to the polls. And so we've got to know, and it's incumbent upon us to begin to ask people who is in your church, is everybody registered? Just ask the question, you know. There should be an announcement, you know, if you're not there. You know, we should have deputies in every place we can find that's able to register people to vote, you know. And so we have to be able to do that. And we can't allow, if we need to, you know, go back to the old days and how they used to do back in the day, have a rent party so they could pay their rent. If we need to have a voter ID party,
yeah.
Sell some dinners or something, go wash some cars so people can have some money to send off to get these documents that they don't have. We need to do that. We need to do whatever we need to do. And we need to stop making excuses about why we can't get it done.
I have to agree with that. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Okay, Jimmy, as we get ready to close out this segment, I want to ask you one final question. You know, when it comes to all that's going on and the fact that President Obama has done so much for this country, what's your prediction for November?
You know, I don't want to say it out loud because I don't want nobody, you know, trying to come get me, but I really believe that this is not going to be that close of an election. I think the media has hyped it up like that, and these polls coming out every other day that mean something different every day they come out.
Right.
I mean, you know, just something different. It means something different every other day. So I don't even pay any attention to the polls. But when I sit and I watch the president speak and I hear the response of those people in the audience and I hear those people when they're interviewing them afterwards about – how excited they are and how they drove 200 miles to be standing in the sun where they were there for 4 hours for him to come talk and speak to them for 45 minutes. That's commitment. Those
yes.
people are going to go out and knock on some doors and make sure things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, he might get outraised, and Mitt Romney might spend all the money in the bank. The Koch brothers are going to raise as much money and give as much money as they possibly can. But at the end of the day, that too is going to bite them because, they, you know, the only way they keep making money is outside of some of their shady dealings. But at some point, the people are going to realize, I don't think I want to buy that product anymore.
Mm.
I don't think I'm going to go there. And once that becomes a not just a fly-by-night, but a strategy, you know, that people begin to employ in their own households.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we decide, if every family just makes a decision to stop doing one thing,
mm-hmm.
whatever that one thing is, buying paper towels or the Kleenex or whatever it is, you know, from those people that we know are doing wrong, if every family did that, that's going to have an impact. Because, see, these people only understand one thing. They understand bottom line profit. That's all they're concerned about. If you
right.
got $400 million to put into a campaign to ensure that your candidate wins, that's telling me you are expecting a return on that investment.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
That's what you're telling me. So for us little people that give our little $5, our little $10 every now and then, you know,
mm-hmm.
to the presidential campaign. My expectation for the president is to do what you said you was going to do when you went there.
Right.
That's all. And I know if you do what you said you was going to do, I'm going to benefit. My
mm-hmm.
family is going to benefit. My
right.
son is going to benefit because these things are being placed for years to come. We're fighting now for the Voting Rights Act that happened in 1964, and we're still reaping the benefits of that. So my son will reap the benefits from the Affordable Health Care Act 60 years after it's over.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, you know, so I anticipate and I expect that the president will win. I have no doubt about that. He said it himself. I have no doubt about that. And he has this quote, and we can leave on that. He says, because I was kind, you thought I was a lamb. He said, but you went too far. Wait a minute. I don't want to misquote him. You went too far and, wait a minute. Hold on. Go on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Back to, you know, Facebook refresh when you don't want it to.
Right.
And then when you want it to, you don't do it. Okay. Okay, here we go. Sorry, listening audience. Because I was kind, you thought I was a lamb. Because you went too far, you will see I am a lion, and I will rise.
Mm.
Yes. And he posed the question in his closing statements the other day in his speech. He says, if you believe in me like I believe in you, he said, we will win. And I believe that, and I do believe in his president. I do believe in his president. That doesn't say I agree with everything that he does, because I don't agree with everything, you know, that my family do, but I still believe in him. I
mm-hmm.
still love him. I don't love him any less. But I believe in him, and I believe he has the best interest of this country at heart, because he wants it to be a better place for his children as well. And so because of that, you know, we'll go through the ups and downs. The poll numbers will change, and he'll do something that'll have people going crazy here in the next month or so. You know, by the time Labor Day rolls around, he might have the Mitt Romney moment on a vacation down in Hawaii, because that's where he goes every year, is Hawaii. So
right,
you know,
right.
And for some reason we think Hawaii is not part of 50 parts of one of the states of the United States, so we think it's some exotic place. So, you know, but I expect the president to win. I really do. And
yeah.
I'll be there in January of 2013.
All right.
I hope it's not as cold as it was in 2009.
All right, it's time for another break. And coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit about Chris Rock's comments about the 4th of July, Oprah's Family Feud, and what's going on in Chicago with the murder rate. I just can't get my head wrapped around it. You're listening to current events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Even if I do, I'll always call. Checking on you, make sure you're okay.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
PR News in Washington, I'm Dick Iuliano. The heat that's been broiling the nation from the Midwest to the East Coast is easing a bit following a line of thunderstorms ushering in cooler temperatures. NPR's Allison Keyes reports on the extreme heat.
Finally, you can take a breath outside in Washington, D.C. and not feel as if you're breathing fire. But Dave King and Larry Rockwell out on the National Mall differ on whether the hot, mushy weather has been a bother.
I was smart enough not to go outside the last several days. But no, it's fine. It's easily tolerable for me, but...
Well, that's because you're a freak.
But the conditions have been no laughing matter for the thousands from Ohio to West Virginia to New Jersey who lost power in storms last week. Ron Marano with Jersey Central Power and Light says thousands more lost their light Saturday, but crews were already on high alert.
We were able to transition to restoring customers.
People have been hitting pools, movie theaters, and even subways to escape the heat. Allison Keyes, NPR News, Washington.
The most destructive wildfire in Colorado history is now 98% contained. The blaze forced more than 30,000 people from their homes in and around Colorado Springs. Concerns are rising about the effect the destruction will have on the area's economy. Hotel owners say business is down, and restaurant and tourist shops are seeing little foot traffic. Officials in southern Russia expect the death toll to rise after devastating flooding. At least 150 people are confirmed dead. Jessica Gallagher reports from Moscow.
Russia's emergency ministry has deployed some 1,500 people to help search for survivors in the country's Black Sea region in the south. This after torrential rains dropped about a foot of rain on the region, what typically falls in the area during a two-month period. Many residents complained they weren't given ample warning to vacate the area before the water rushed in overnight, while most people were sleeping. Other residents blame officials for releasing water from a reservoir, saying that water caused thousands of homes to be engulfed. Federal officials admit releasing water from a mountain above Krimsk, but they claim that's not what caused all of the damage. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered a federal investigation into why residents weren't warned about the flooding before it happened. For NPR News, I'm Jessica Gallagher in Moscow.
NATO says six of its service members have been killed in a bombing in eastern Afghanistan. NATO has not identified the troops or their nationalities, but U.S. troops make up the bulk of NATO forces in Afghanistan. Islamists in Pakistan are streaming toward the capital to demonstrate against the government's decision to reopen supply routes to the United States and NATO forces fighting in Afghanistan. Islamabad closed the route in November in retaliation for American airstrikes that killed Pakistani troops. It agreed to reopen the route after Secretary of State Hillary Clinton apologized. This is NPR News. Egypt's official news agency says the country's top generals are holding an emergency meeting. The generals are expected to be discussing President Mohamed Morsi's surprise decision to recall the dissolved Islamist-dominated parliament. Last month, the then-ruling generals ordered the legislature dissolved following a ruling by Egypt's highest court that a third of the parliament's members were illegally elected. There are reports from the volatile Eastern Democratic Republic Congo that a strategic town has been captured by rebels. NPR's Ophabia Quist-Arkton says civilians, even government troops, have been fleeing the area in recent days after clashes with the rebels.
Rutshuru is the name of the town in eastern Congo that the rebels claim to have seized. There were reports on Friday of panicked civilians leaving Rutshuru with the armed dissidents within shelling distance. Neighboring Uganda reported that about 600 Congolese troops had fled across the border. The army's retreat was preceded by the evacuation of the UN and relief agencies from the area. The leader of the rebellion, renegade Congolese General Bosco Ntaganda, defected from the military in April, shattering Congo's jittery two-year-long peace in the east. Neighboring Rwanda denies accusations that it's backing the rebels. Ophabia Quist-Arkton, NPR News.
At 31 years old, Roger Federer excelled in the third set to win his record-tying seventh Wimbledon title. Federer beat Great Britain's Andy Murray in four sets. Murray had ignited the passions of British tennis fans as their first countryman in the Wimbledon men's finals since 1938. I'm Dick Iuliano, NPR News in Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Before we get started on the second half of the show, I want to mention two people. One is Andy Griffin. Now, of course, this past week, we lost a great individual. I'm going to tell you, I wasn't a big fan of Andy Griffin, but I was a big fan of Matlock. And so I really hate to see him go. I can remember I used to stay up and watch marathons of Matlock every opportunity. I was just pretty much hooked on it. And because I thought the show was put together masterfully. And so I really hate that we're going to really miss him. Also, Representative Jesse Jackson Jr., has taken ill, and I just wanted to, you know, for all of the CEWPCers out there, to send up prayers and to his family, because we know that they do a lot of work out there in Chicago, and we want him to continue to be successful as well as healthy, and of course our thoughts and prayers go out to him. I also want to mention something that's very, very important. Now, for those of you that are listening, I want you to understand that there is a potential problem that may be coming about with the internet. Again, your internet may shut down tonight, 12 o'clock Eastern time, because of some malicious activity that's going on or is planned to go on by some hackers, if you will. Now, it has been reported that internet lovers and users, your services are at risk. and the FBI has been working hard to get your attention. The warnings about malware attacks have been splashed across Facebook and Google. While internet service providers have sent notices, the FBI has set up a special website to inform digital users about potentially losing their internet service on Monday, tomorrow. And in fact, it is scheduled to go down at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, of course, me being in the field, I am going to be actively participating or watching this activity as it goes on and going to be blogging about it offline in the case that my internet goes down. But I will be an active participant watching this activity as it unfolds. Now, the number of computers that probably are infected is more than 277,000 worldwide. Now, this, of course, is down for 360,000 in April. Of those still infected, the FBI believes that about 64,000 are in the United States. Users whose computers are still infected Monday will lose their ability to go online, and they will have to contact their local service providers for help deleting the malware and reconnecting the internet. International hackers ran an online advertising scam which took control of more than 570,000 infected computers around the world. Most victims don't even know their computers have been infected, and the temporary system set up by the FBI was shut down at 12:01 a.m. Eastern, Monday, July 9th. To check whether a computer is infected, users can visit a website run by the group brought by the FBI, which is www.dasindelta, csincharlie, wasinwhiskeygsingolf.org. That's www.dcwg.org. Delta Charlie Whiskey Golf. DCWG.org. I would encourage you to go out there, especially if you're listening to this via the internet, because this is serious. Now, from a technically speaking, it's pretty much going to be somewhat similar to a takeover of your system. They normally use these bots, and these bots pretty much are kind of live natively in your system and waiting on the time to launch, and they create a coordinated attack in a lot of cases. So I would encourage you to go again and check this out. Now, Jima, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
I want to talk a little bit about Chris Rock. Now, of course, the Twitter sphere was on fire based on a tweet he made. Right? Now, Chris Rock seemed to have tweeted up a bit of a controversy. The comedian whose latest project is executive producing Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell for FX ruffled more than a few feathers after sending out this message to his followers. Happy White People's Independence Day. The slaves weren't free, but I'm sure they enjoyed the fireworks. Now, we all know Chris Rock is no stranger to controversy. One of the most controversial bit is the N-word versus black people from his 1996 special, Bring the Pain. Now, Jima, what do you think about this tweet? Why was it so, why was people so disturbed by it?
Well, unfortunately, it was right down racial lines, because most of the black people that read the tweet thought it was funny and really didn't really put nothing else into it. So I'm not real sure what all the big hoopla was, because it would be different if this was something he had never said before. But Chris Rock has made this statement before. That just goes to show you they don't follow Chris Rock. Because if they followed Chris Rock, they would know that something he said in his stand-up, you know, all the time, you know, so in one way or another. So I'm not real sure what the big brouhaha was. It was kind of crazy to me.
So you think he's going to receive any backlash behind this?
This is going to blow away because it's not that important. I mean, the 4th of July is one day. Most people do have their own kind of ideas around it, you know, 1776, black people wasn't free. So the country may have been, but those of us that were here, we were not. We weren't even considered people, not a full person. So, you know, it's a sour taste. I even think one time Chris Rock referred to it as, you know, the relationship or the whatever you have for the uncle that molested you, but he's playing your way through college. You know, you kind of have that love-hate
right.
relationship. You have that love, and you do. You have that love-hate relationship with America because it could be so much better than what it is if we were to really become post-racial and colorblind. But since we're not and we don't have any real desires to become that, because there's money in us not being colorblind.
Mm.
There's money in us not being post-racial. So, you know, no one's going to give up that.
So does this controversy, you know, every now and then it rears its ugly head, but does these controversies like this kind of poke into that wound that we have as Americans that we have yet to heal?
Yeah, but, you know, 12 steps to any program, any level of grief, any whatever, you got to admit you have a problem. So America has refused to admit the bona fide issues around slavery and how bad it was. And because of that, it has never healed. And this isn't the, you know, first time you and I are having this conversation. I say that all the time. So until America really, in its full throttle, you know, talk about slavery and how it happened, not trying to excuse it by saying, well, there was black people that were selling slaves. That's irrelevant. If there was nobody buying them, then they wouldn't have been able to sell them. So, you know,
right.
You know, we still keep dealing with the symptoms and we're not dealing with the problem. And so because of that and because we've been brainwashed, some of us, that slavery wasn't that bad. I'm talking about black people, that they don't even want to talk about slavery. They want to act like it never existed. Then you give everybody else a pass to act like it didn't exist. The Jewish people don't act like the Holocaust didn't happen.
And they bring it up all the time.
And you can't even remotely think about saying anything about it. But for some reason, the people that marketed this scheme to have us, you know, denigrate ourselves and have all these thoughts about ourselves, it was priceless. I mean, they've done so much damage. I don't know if we'll ever recover.
Speaking of damage and recovering, Chicago. This is crazy what's happening in Chicago. The violence in Chicago continues to escalate, and the body count just continue to grow. Teens were shot in the 12400 block of South Perry Avenue neighborhood. He was shot in the back and in the leg, and then people just getting shot there every day. With the body count up to like 30 now. What is going on in Chicago?
Lack of resources, lack of anything to do, lack of parental guidance. Lack of fathers in the community, too many guns that's too accessible. It's a whole lot of things going on. But once again, what is the primary? What is the shooting and the killing and all that, that's the symptom. Why
right.
do people wake up in the morning and want to shoot somebody? That's
right.
what you got to get to. What is driving that type of behavior? What is it that's going on in their world that they have so much hatred for themselves and so much discontent and lack of respect for the human race? What is that? And if we never answer that question, then you can pour all the money you can into an environment and you're going to come out with the same results because you never got to the real question.
Do we want to answer that question? Because if we did, wouldn't we have made some strides towards trying to figure that out?
Well, it's just like the question around whether or not we want to answer the question around the effects of slavery. Do we want to answer that question? Because that's a money-making question as well. For as many people as you kill, whoever the morticians are, they're making money. For the many people that you convict, they're going to jail. So we now know that our prison systems are being handled by private industries, and so they're making money. They make money on how many beds they fill, not by how many people they rehabilitate. So there's money to be made in this. The gun sales are off the charts right now, and yet we're still trying to figure out how they're getting here. How is it that certain communities have gun stores and liquor stores and all sorts of type of things in their communities, but you go to other places, you got to drive a country mile to find a liquor store? or a gun store. So what is that about? You know, that's strategic, you know, and that's strategic in their in their city planning. I mean, the city has something to do with that. So if we're not going to the city council meetings, jumping on top of the tables and creating a distraction about, hey, I don't want to see another cash in place in my community. I don't want to see another gun store in my community or another liquor store in my community. If we don't do that, then the city just continues, because now the city is making money.
So this train is
one big cash cow.
Yeah, this train has left the station then. I mean, you know, so how can we, you know, pull it back in?
It's very difficult. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that, because it's hard to trust a lot of local officials, because some of them are just so shady. Everybody got their hand under the table getting some sort of, I shouldn't say everybody, a lot of people got their hand under the table getting some sort of kickback, you know. Stuff you see on TV, that's just not TV. That stuff happens in real life. And so, I'm pushing myself to be a lot more active in my council meetings and in my school board meetings, because all of these things have a direct impact on my life, and I need to know what's happening. But if I can't fault the owner of the store, because the city is the one that let them come in there.
Right.
I need to go to the mayor. I need to go to the city council, because they're the ones that's allowing that business to be there.
Yeah, that goes back to the whole fact that it's great to participate in the presidential election, as we should. But it's even greater to participate in your local politics, because, you know, the reality is all politics is local. And if we're not getting involved in, you know, in those city council meetings, those school board meetings, then, you know, our expectations can be what we're getting now. And Chicago is basically a byproduct of that, right?
Right. And you're dealing with not just Chicago. Chicago is who we're hearing about, but it's the same thing in New Orleans. It's the same thing in Philadelphia. You know, it's same thing in Detroit. And you're dealing with, and it's in hit populations, you know, that are heavily, you know, African-American or Latino. And what is that about? Why is that?
Yeah.
You know, and so some of the onus and responsibility is on those in the community. You know, we've talked about this before. You know, your son ain't got no job, so how every day he coming in with a new pair of shoes? And you don't say nothing about it.
Right.
That means you telling him it's okay. So until parents, whether, you know, and you don't have to be 50 years old to be a good parent. You can be a young, good parent, but you got to have some boundaries, you know?
Yeah.
And what you don't know, don't be afraid to ask. But, you know, we've become a nation that, you know, we don't even ask questions anymore, because we don't want to be responsible for nothing or nobody, and we don't want to be held accountable for nothing. So we just, you know, close our eyes and walk through the neighborhood like we don't know what's going on. You know, and I love my mother. My mother does not care about who says what about her. She sees too many people congregating across the street in a vacant lot, she is calling the police. And she don't care that you know, because she's going to come out on the porch with the phone in hand, letting you know she's going to call somebody. Grass get too high across the street where the city's supposed to come cut it.
Yeah.
She calling the city. Y'all ain't cut the grass this month. You know, that's what you do when you care about your community.
Right.
But if you don't care, the grass will be up to the sky.
Right. And you talk about it amongst each other, right?
Right. You're talking about, well, I sure wish the city come cut this grass.
Right.
Okay. Have you called the city and told them to come cut the grass?
Right.
I mean, and you and I was just having this conversation about a couple weeks ago.
About the house down the street.
About the couple houses around the corner that are vacant. Mm-hmm. And I was like, somebody, they need to come cut the grass. I need to call the city. And
right.
I said that. And why did I say that? Because that's what my mama would have done.
That's
and
right.
And so before I can make the call, the next day I go by, the grass is cut, which means I wasn't the only one that probably had that thought.
Yep.
And since then, it's been cut on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your neighborhood and your community will take care of itself when the people in the community start taking care of each other.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of taking care of the community, and I really liked how people galvanized themselves around Trayvon Martin and the stuff that was going on with that. And it was just surprising for me to see the in and out that he's been going through, George Zimmerman, that is, the jail. He gets bail, he lies, goes back to jail. Now it's end up setting up a $1 million bond for him. Now he gets back out again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just crazy to me on what's going on with him. And I just don't understand how he is going to be able to get off and scot-free. You think he will?
No, I don't think he will, but, you know, you have to let the system play itself out, and he is entitled to bail since it was granted before, although I don't think it should have been granted in the beginning. I think it should have been full cash, $1 million. I don't think he should have been able to get out on the 10%.
Right.
Because we knew he'd get the $100,000, and he probably would have got the million, but at least he would have had to, you know, it would have been a bigger penny that,
right.
that somebody would have had to put down. So, you know, I think the judge, having even made the statement that he felt like he was going to run the first time, well, if you felt that the first time, you don't feel that now?
Right.
I mean, what has he done that's changed your mind that he won't go nowhere? So, I mean, you know, it's what it is. I can only hope that you know, if the tables would turn, that the judicial system would be, you know, so blind and would treat, you know, all people the same. But since we've been on the other side for so long, we know that it doesn't. And so this just continues to pour salt in the wound that is just hard to bear because it just shouldn't be this way. It just should not
yeah.
be this way.
So here's the latest. The Associated Press is reporting that the neighborhood watch leader charged with fatally shooting an unarmed black teenager is in a safe house that is being protected by his security team. George Zimmerman was released Friday after posting bail for the second time on a second-degree murder charge in the killing of Trayvon Martin. His attorney said Sunday he was in Seminole County in Central Florida. Some of Martin's supporters have been angry Zimmerman was not arrested until 46 days after February's shooting, and Zimmerman has received death threats. He was released from jail after his defense fund helped him post 10% of the $1 million bond. A judge revoked his previous $150,000 bond last month when prosecutors presented evidence that Zimmerman and his wife misled the court about how much money they had. And that's an interesting word they use, misled.
Mm-hmm.
I like the term lie or perjury a lot better, but I don't want to be technical. They just basically lied. And so it begs the question about his credibility on everything now.
Mm-hmm.
When this money was so close to them because they were actively involved in raising it, and at least setting up PayPal and all those things that are around it, because you had to give your bank accounts, you had to give a lot of personal information when you're doing that. So it is, you know, and as I said it weeks ago, that, you know, they basically lied. I didn't want to have to get all technical. It was just a lie. And so it was interesting that they used this term in his article called misled, but we all know what it really means. And it's interesting that if people seem to keep, I guess, you know, you said it best, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But this is a whole lot of things that is not in George Zimmerman's favor right now. I just don't understand how he's still free.
Well, he's still free because the judge decided to grant him bail. That's it. It has nothing to do with whether or not, you know, he'll be found innocent or guilty from the trial, but. You know, this particular judge and that system thought he was the crime wasn't severe enough to deny him bail, and so they decided to give him bail. And truth be told, he's probably safer out than he is in.
Yeah, that's probably why they're trying to keep him out.
I mean, seriously, though, I mean, I'm not trying to be funny about that, but he's probably safer out than he is in because nobody knows where he is, and then if he's being protected, you know, by whoever. He's probably safer in a safe house somewhere than he is on the inside of prison because we know they in jail because people die in jail every day and don't nobody know what happened.
Yeah. So
that's the sad truth, but that is the truth.
Yeah, yeah. And then he wouldn't be able to stand trial and then we would never know what happened.
Right, right. And then there would be no real closure for that family. So.
Right, exactly right. So it is probably, you know, that's one way of looking at it. But, I mean, you know, even if they was to put him in solitary confinement, I think there will be a lot of people that would be gratified with that as well.
Right.
So I want to shift now to Oprah. Now, this is your buddy, your pal. Y'all go to lectures together. Y'all, you know, you're in her class, Oprah Life class. She sent you a book and all those things. I think that's great. So what is the scuttlebutt about her buying a barbershop? And the Family Feud that's associated with it.
from what I read, the barbershop was going into foreclosure. It's her father's barbershop. It was going into foreclosure, and it had, you know, been at this point before, and in some kind of way they was able to, you know, wrangle it out or whatever. So this time she just went on ahead and bought it. Now, it's the stepmother who is upset that she bought it, because she says ever since she's been around and active that she has to be in charge of everything. So stepmother just didn't want her to buy it because she knew then she would try to change what they was doing or where the barbershop was located and all these sorts of things. So that's really what it's about. I mean, just ungrateful in my opinion, because it's your family business. And you think you'd be happy that somebody could come bail your tail out and
right.
take care of it, but you want to talk about what she want to do. Well, if I came and bailed you out of something, I'd probably put a few restrictions on you, too.
At least so you can
know?
Stay afloat, right? I mean, you know, that's business.
Right. I mean, if you're gonna run a business, it at least needs to be successful, and it doesn't need to continue to look like you don't know how to run a business. So let me put some things in place to help you. I'm pretty sure. I know a couple salon owners, a couple barbershop owners. I'm pretty sure they would love not to have to be worrying about paying rent and lease space.
I know that's right.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they would take that and be happy.
Yeah. Every day of the week.
Every day of the week. Because that's more money in their pocket. So I'm not real sure what that was about. But, you know, sometimes you just can't give people stuff. You can't bless them because they don't know what to do with it. And that's why so many people right now are not walking in favor, because the Lord knows if he was to bless you with that one thing that you keep asking for, you'd act like you was better than everybody in the world. So he got to keep
yeah.
you humble, keep you
yep.
on your knees.
Yeah.
So.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about we're going to switch to our sports segment. We're going to talk about Serena's victory, as well as what is going on with the NBA. Man, people are going all over the place. It'd be interesting to hear your comments on that. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, number is 323-580-5712. Be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises has joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Point.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift now to our sports segment, and I want to talk about the remarkable Serena Williams win yesterday. It was amazing to watch it. It was kind of scary at during the second set, but the third set she pulled it out and did an amazing job. Jima, what do you think about her performance?
Oh, yeah, she hung in there. She was great under pressure. She did what she was supposed to do. She wanted to win. And when you got to win, sometimes you got to dig deep. You got to go down to your core. And that's exactly what Serena did yesterday. It wasn't a matter of it was an easy win for her, or she cakewalked through it. You know, and you're in the championship, so you should expect everybody's A game to be on top.
What was so sweet for me was the fact that just a little while ago, she was rushed to an L.A. hospital to undergo emergency treatment for complications for what they call a pulmonary embolism, which is a blockage of an artery of her lung. It was a clot that lodged in the lung but originated elsewhere in her body. And so for her to go through that, and if it was left untreated, she could have pretty much died. And for her to go through that and the scare and all the things associated with being down and sick and out and stuff like that, for her to come back and to raise to one of the highest posts of tennis and to win in the fashion that she did, I thought was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and if you listen to some of the commentators, I mean, they were talking about her as though, you know, she was washed up or whatever. And even on yesterday, it was almost like they was wanting her not to win. And sometimes that's just quite irritating when they come off like that, you know. But I think, you know, it was great for Serena to get that victory, having not stood in the winner's circle for a little while. And like you said, overcoming all of the different medical issues that she's had. And then, you know, I'm just looking forward to what they'll do in the doubles. And then her and Venus will be able to pull that off and seeing what they do over in London. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. And one of the things I did notice, and it's always good to see people just mature. The maturation process, when you're watching it kind of in a public fashion, you know, LeBron James, for example, Serena Williams, and just others throughout the, you know, through the National Football and Basketball Association leagues, you see people grow up literally before your eyes. And I believe I saw Serena grow up through this Wimbledon victory. I recall when she would, you know, when they would miss a call or she would get frustrated, that she would be angry and be boisterous about her frustration. Mm-hmm. But it seems like in this particular competition, she maintained a calm that was like just had a lot of resolve in it, you know. And so,
well, and I think that's because she wasn't expected to win. So, you know, the pressure really wasn't on her. You know what I'm saying? They didn't have her as the favorite, I don't believe. And so, I agree with you, though. She has matured a lot. She won the old-fashioned way. She fought hard. She played hard. And she stuck to her game plan.
And when it's all said and done, I just think that this is one that she will remember because of where she had to come from. You know, not just physically, but emotionally. You know, all the things that goes, and your health is of one thing, and you go through a psychological piece component because you're saying, can my body perform like it used to? So not only do you have to overcome the physical aspects, now you add this next dimension, which is a mental or psychological component. It makes the victory so much sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking about the maturation process, LeBron James went through it. You know, I have maintained for a long period of time that I thought that he was good enough to win a championship. Now, of course, he cannot do it by himself. But the thing that he had to go through was last year's defeat, a la the Serena Williams embolism. Is the same thing that LeBron James went through, but was in a physical aspect when Dallas beat them down. So he had to go through some psychological maturation in order for him to reach the highest pinnacle of the NBA. And so, again, the maturation process has a profound impact on an individual and changes their perspective, in my opinion, on how they see themselves and the future of their sport.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
And so, speaking of LeBron James and the Miami Heat, what do you think about Ray Ray joining the Heat?
Well, you know, here's my take on that. You know, I'm a Ray Allen fan. I've been a Ray Allen fan since back when he was in Seattle, and I was mad at Seattle when they traded him to Boston. So, you know, I think Ray was in control. He was a free agent. I think he was in control this time of where he went as opposed to the other way around. Let's say, he stuck to loyalty and stayed in Boston, and then midway through the season, Boston traded him anyway, and they sent him somewhere he doesn't want to go. At least now he's in control. I mean, owners do it all the time. They ship players around. I mean, do you think Jason Terry really wanted to leave Dallas to go to Boston? But he now had no choice. They traded him.
Right.
So there he goes. So I think when athletes have an option and that they're in control as it comes to free agency, I say they take full control of it. Because the owners are gonna do what they think is in the best interest of their team, and their team winning, players have to start doing the same thing too. So when you get that opportunity to do it, you go to make it happen. It looks like, you know, Miami might be a good fit for them. It's gonna be hard playing against Boston, but you know, it's nature of the beast. It's business.
You know, as
Ice-T said in New Jack City, it's business. It ain't personal.
Right, and so. Two things there I want to note is one, I think LeBron James was the catalyst for people, at least players, making them decision for themselves or being in charge of their own decision. Now, he did it in dramatic fashion, but I believe that it was the catalyst for every other NBA player looking at their future and saying, hey, if I don't make this decision on where I go, they're going to make it for me, and I may not have a favorable outcome.
But you think back to Shaq, though, when Shaq left Orlando. People want to forget that Shaq was in Orlando before he was with the Lakers. And he was the number one pick coming out and all this stuff, and they went to the finals and got swept or whatever.
Too.
And you know, Shaq had to make a decision.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, Shaq, you know, this was done. It wasn't all with a primetime special on ESPN.
Right, right.
But at the end of the day, Shaq kind of made the same decision. I'm going where I know I can win.
Exactly right.
Everybody loves a winner, and everybody, you know, want to go down as a, you know, it don't matter what team it was. I mean, you look at Juwan Howard. Juwan Howard is an NBA champion. Robert Horry, NBA champions, because the teams they played on, they may not have contributed, but they got a ring.
Right, many times over. Mm-hmm.
Many times over. So you got to go where you go in the league to win a championship. You don't just go play.
Right.
So, I mean, for the love of the game, but still, you want to win.
Exactly.
So I think it's awesome. I just wish more players would do it, and then I wish they would take more stances on things that they do have control over.
Yeah. So I wonder now, the second part of that, I wonder now, the Miami-Boston matchup now, if Rondo will be checking Ray Ray or Ray Ray checking Rondo when they're on the court, what do you think that interchange is going to be like?
Well, see, I don't think Ray going to start in Miami, so he'll be coming off the bench. And probably when he's in, Rondo probably won't be in because it'll probably be that time when the second, you know, the reserve is in or whatever. So I don't know. I mean, but I just think, you know, they'll know each other's schemes, that's for sure. I mean, you play a team enough, you know how they play. And that's what made the rivalry so great back in the day with the Boston and L.A.'s. Because you knew everybody was going to bring their A game. And that's what you got in that series with Boston and Miami. They brought their A game. Everybody did. I mean, that was some serious basketball. And it wasn't time, this is how it's going to go down probably for at least another couple of years until, you know, maybe New York get their stuff together or Philadelphia get their stuff together. It's going to be Boston and Miami, I think, for the next couple of years, trying to get to the finals.
Yeah, but Boston, I mean, they have a, you know, short live, right? And they're going to have to shake some things up. I mean, their team is getting – their team is aging.
Right, but agreed. That's why I said the next couple of years.
Right,
I mean, we don't know who's coming out next, but
right.
you know, New York could, they're not there yet. Philadelphia is not there yet. And I'm not sure who else is left in the East. Indiana, you know, they played a good series, but, they still missing some points, some parts. And it's all about coaching. I don't put nothing against Doc Rivers.
I'm telling you.
That's
yeah,
a
I don't care who we got
right
on the squad,
there, the
right? You know, who we got on the squad.
Yeah,
you're
sure.
going to make it happen.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
So what about Nash going to L.A.? What's the dynamics there?
I don't even know why people are making such a big deal out of that either, because really, I'm not even sure what he's going to offer to L.A. And that's not to say I don't dislike Steve Nash, but he on the downside of his career too, and he's like late 30s. So, you know,
early
that's like 40s,
one
Kidd.
Or two, yeah.
Right, that's like Jason Kidd going to New York. I mean, the best
right.
Jason Kidd can do in New York is get Jeremy Lin ready.
Right.
That's the best he can do is be
right.
a, you know, mentor, coach, player to him.
Right,
so I'm
right.
not real sure who Steve Nash is going to – I don't know. I'm not seeing it, so I don't know. That one, I can't give you a whole lot on that one because I don't understand that.
Well, one yeah, I believe you can understand is that USA team. Man, it looks good. That team.
Okay, but somebody
yeah.
on Twitter today said, who is the outside shooter on that team? And I'm not overly, you know, whatever. But somebody made a point that it seemed like we might be running a little low on outside shooters. What's your take on that?
You know, you don't really. I mean, LeBron James kind of demonstrated outside shooting when it's down to the clutch. It's not a high percentage shot. So you want people aggressive. You want it down in the paint. You want people that's going to be able to create shots and take high percentage shots. So granted, there may not be a whole bunch of people that can shoot jumpers, but at the same time, you want to shoot high percentage shots. So that's not may not be a part of the scheme. I mean, for example,
right.
when you looked at Oklahoma's game and the fact that they had that 7-footer shooting 3-pointers, it wasn't all that bad. Now he was making
right.
it when it was down to the wire. But I mean, this team seemed to be having an amazing amount of talent on it. What do you think about that?
Oh, for sure. When you talk. I mean, you know, I got to go for the Sooner. You know, you're talking about Blake Griffin. You're talking about Westbrook. You got Kobe. You got LeBron. They just added Deron Williams. I mean, yeah, it's talent abound. Can they play together? That's the question. Can they check their egos at the airport in America so when they get to London, they all on the same page? That's what you have to worry about.
Yeah, I think they can. You got some natural leaders on the team. And then you got some, you know, got a lot of respect for other players on the team too, and so I believe that the chemistry will work itself out because people are naturally getting. It's going to be about who's coaching them though, you know.
Right, and you
gonna
okay,
be, that's
so,
going to be a
so
critical
got,
piece of the pie that's going to be overstated, understated.
Right. So you got okay. Here's the team. Everybody listen. You got LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, Chris Paul, Deron Williams, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Love, Carmelo Anthony, Tyson Chandler, and who was just added was Blake Griffin, James Harden, and Andre Iguodala from Philadelphia. So five of the players played on the 08 team and went undefeated, and that would be Kobe, Chris Paul, Williams, Carmelo, and LeBron. So they got some history on what it's going to take to make it happen. So we'll see.
I tell you one thing. It is definitely going to be a dunk fest. Everybody, I mean, the top five that you just mentioned and then add Blake Griffin to the end, they can just kill you down the lane. I mean, the
right.
fast break is going to be crazy. I mean, so
right.
and going to the hole, passing, I mean, it is going to be a dunk fest. It's going to be like a the All-Star game, every game.
Right. But yeah, that's what we're hoping for. That's what we're hoping for. And the fact that Oklahoma City got three players on there, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, the other thing, though, is that when you play overseas, they do play a little differently than we do play here in the United States. In particular, the way that they play in the – I mean, they play – they foul hard.
Right.
I mean, they elbow you, they beat you up down there, so it ain't no soft playing when you go down in that paint. You know, it's back in the day. When you go in the paint, you get knocked down, and you know you've been there. That's the kind of ball those guys play overseas. So it'll be interesting to see. Although we got a lot of players that we talked about are finesse players, it'll be interesting to see how they deal with that type of physical play.
Right.
So we're reaching the end of the show for the day, and in fact, I think this was a great show we had today. We've been off the air for a little over a month. Has been awesome being off the air, but it had definitely missed having the conversation, talking about the current events and doing all the things. And so as we get ready to close the show for today, I would like to know, what are your final thoughts?
Well, I agree. The time off was much needed and deserved, and glad we were able to take it. Glad to be back on. Looking forward to upcoming weeks of reporting on what's happening in America, what's happening in the world, keeping people in tune and what's happening politically, making sure that we're staying on top of what's happening, because we have to be the voice that sometimes has to cry out in the wilderness to say the time is now. Looking forward to hearing the reporting from this upcoming week from the NAACP convention in Houston, as to how Mitt Romney and Joe Biden will do. So the Vice President Biden is down there as well, so that should be quite interesting. But I'm excited about the time that we're in right now. This is truly history, that we are living history as we speak right now at this appointed time, and so I'm excited about it. Looking forward to things to come. It's been hot, so I'm looking forward to a little rain down here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area this coming week, because it has been a scorcher all over the world, all over the country. It's been that way, and so I guess that's another subject you can broach in terms of global warming and what impact it's having with all of our temperatures and the forest fires. And now in Colorado, there is threatened of floods. You know, from 2 weeks ago, they were dealing with the wildfire. So, you know, what's causing all of this? So, you know, but I'm just excited. I'm excited about where we're, you know, what the show and the possibilities of it. And I just wish, you know, and hope that people go out and support an organization that's trying to do something good in the community. If you don't know one, you can definitely support our feeding and summer feeding and reading program that we have at our church at Faith Missionary Baptist Church in Rowlett, Texas. We're there every day, Monday through Friday, serving up kids. We're feeding them both, you know, feeding their spirit, we're feeding their bodies, and we're feeding their minds. And so it has been a great honor to serve in that capacity. So I just implore people to go find something to go help out and do. Go do something. Go help. You know, be a help to someone outside of yourself if you can. And that doesn't mean you got to give out any money. You know, just go spend some time. Sometimes spending time, you'll be surprised at the reward you get from that.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about this, the summer program. Tell people the schedule and, you know, what time things start and what activities you're actually doing and things of that nature. And I'll talk a little bit about how they can donate and where they can go and do things of that nature.
Well, as I stated, we're there Monday through Friday from 8 to 2. We start at 8 in terms of serving breakfast. Breakfast goes from 8 to 9. And at 9 o'clock, we then have a morning meditation period. And then that goes to 9:30. 9:30, we break off into our classes. We have age groups from pre-K, which is ages 4 up to age 18, and everybody's in their class. So we have a pre-K class, and then we have first, second, third grade class, our first primary class, and then our second primary class, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. And then we have a seventh grade on up to 12th grade. 9:30 to 10:30, we generally, about 9:30, 9:15, everybody does some journaling. Talk about their day before or just anything they want to write about. Then they go into reading. We have a reading comprehension that they do. They read stories and answer questions, or we do anything around language arts, whether it's spelling, sentence structure, capitalization, things of that nature. And then at 10:30, we go into math, and depending on the age group, it's regular math, adding, subtracting, multiplication, dividing, up until we have some algebra, some pre-algebra, things that happen. We have a long digit, a multiplication, and just in the range of things based on the grade that they're going to. And then we have lunch at 11:30, from 11:30 to 12:30. They have lunch, and if they once they get done with lunch, they go outside and play, kind of rub off some of that energy. And we come back in at 1 o'clock, and we have our life skills, talk about anything from hygiene to bullying to goal setting to even a topic they may come up with. Or some days we'll just play some family fun games. We'll pull out Monopoly. We'll pull out a couple of young men. They know how to play chess. So they have their little chess games going on. And then we break at about 1:45 and come back and have our closing session. And then we're done at 2 o'clock. And so it's a full day. The kids are excited about it. The staff are excited about it. And we've had a great summer. We've had upwards of 60 to 65 kids there at a time. And it has been a blessing in that community, in the neighborhood. And we're just thankful for it, that the church allowed us once again to host the program.
So a program like this must cost a fortune. How much does it cost to do this?
The beauty of it is that we've partnered with the City of Garland's housing department, which is responsible for the summer nutrition program for the City of Garland. And so because we've partnered with them, we're able to get our food from them at no cost. And so we go and we pick up our food every day. And I have to say, I have not seen one meal that the kids did not like. They have thoroughly enjoyed the food. It's been very flavorful and tasteful. It's had good seasoning. And they have not balked at anything. I know the other day, my son ate 2 hamburgers. I was trying to figure out where that was going. But they're enjoying it. And so because of that, we're able to not charge anybody anything. This is a free service that we provide.
You're saying free?
All that we ask, it's free. There's no charge to the family. All we ask is that your kid comes ready to learn, to be respectful, and to listen and follow instructions, and we'll take care of the rest.
Wow. Yeah, this is great. And if you want to participate, there are 3 ways you can help out. You can send a donation to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. Or you can fill out a registration form. We're taking volunteers on pretty much anything. Even if you just want to come out and hang out and just kind of be there as a voice or just a presence to show the support. And if you can't do any of the previous things, just tell somebody about the program. They may be able to help. Their companies may be able to help. They may be come out and partner, because we really want to do God's work. And so we really appreciate everybody that's participating in this summer program. They're doing just an outstanding job, and they're doing a good work for the community. So we can really appreciate that. Well, that's our show for today. I'd like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. All one word, TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. You can follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. You're listening to the sounds of George Spencer. Take us away, Joyce. Sweet dreams.